It's time for Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Mark Holland along with Daniel Pryor once again this week. And Daniel, returning to a subject that you deal with quite a bit in your counseling, and that's marital counseling. And you have some very interesting perspectives on the anatomy of marriage. You want to kind of review some of that
this week. That sounds powerful. That's a very powerful statement, the anatomy of marriage. Mm. I thought I would start it off differently. We do talk a lot about marriage and problems in marriage and this and that. Of course, I see a lot of people in marriage counseling and in just social settings and Hollywood where, boy, marriage just... It just doesn't seem like a good idea, and people struggle and struggle.
Seems to be more and more that way these days. People just cohabit.
Yeah, it's just like people trying to get up a sand dune really fast, you know, and they're they're just sliding back down, and so there's the divorce rate climbing, and people just saying, you know what? And I think a lot of times people just kind of give in to a sort of a mediocre marriage and the problems of the marriage, and you sort of have an Archie Bunker and Edith arrangement where, you know, they really don't get along. You really don't see our Archie and Edith getting along a lot, but it's a system that works, you know. But the anatomy of marriage, there aren't any perfect marriages. You know, it can be, let's say, dirty business because you're dealing with people's lives. And I've said and got some feedback on this, that marriage is a death experience. And I don't mean that it's meant to be a drudgery. But it is a divine institution that was geared to bring us to a point of surrender. Beth Arbel, a name of a Jewish city, not anymore, but means God's house of ambush or the house of God's court. I've often thought that just describes marriage a lot. God's house of ambush, where you go in, they got you know your marriage day. There's the bouquets and all the fun and the rice and you know everything, and then you come out, and not long after that, the door shuts, and then the problems kind of rain down on you, and you can't get out, or you're not supposed to.
With all this, then why get married?
Yeah,
which is kind of what our society is asking.
Yeah, marriage again. I think designed by God. You know, it's for the dying of yourself, and there, you know, in dying to myself, I'm really becoming more human. You know, we in the image of God, and being in the image of God, if we read the Scripture, understand the Scripture, we see that being in the image of God wasn't just kind of a spin-off, or wasn't just kind of an idea or a poetic phrase. Being in the image of God has something fundamental to do with our ability to comprehend God and understand God in Christ. So, God became human in Christ, in Jesus. And our humanness is the meeting ground between man and God. We can't go up and transcend our existence and comprehend God, who doesn't have a face and a body, and that face and body is Jesus Christ. And so that's our meeting place. Well, that's our rendezvous point. So it's critical that we are fully human. And being fully human is, to me, right in step with Paul saying, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling, knowing that it's God that works in
and
you.
And that our the God-ordained institution for many people to do that is marriage.
And basically, I could broaden it and say relationship, and it would include everyone. But marriage is kind of a quintessential model of what human vulnerability should look like. So everybody doesn't have to be married. No, that's not necessary at all. Jesus wasn't married. Why is marriage so hard? And I want to qualify this first of all before we go on. I'm not looking. I know that there are abusive marriages. I'm a counselor. I know that there are abusive marriages and there are immoral marriages. I've counseled with people who met each other because they were previously married, had affairs, divorced their previous spouses, and now they're married together. And one thing that they seem to not be able to find is trust. And you say, well,
why.
Yeah. So there are marriages where, you know, the seeds of the destruction were so plentiful in the, you know, in kind of their union to begin with. Not that things can't be worked through, but I, you know, and I've seen churches and heard churches where it almost seems like regardless of how abusive the relationship can be, they want the couple to stay together. Now, I don't have all the answers for that, and every couple is a little bit different. But I tell rarely find a man in a marriage that's getting his eyes blackened and, you know, on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. So it's typically gals. If you're in it, you can't negotiate from a position of weakness. So if you want to get the man's attention and you want God to get the man's attention through you, you have to be able to kind of lay down a barrier. So that's part of what I'm talking about. But getting back to, in general, marriage is, you know, we were created naked. That is, Adam and Eve were created vulnerable. And then comes sin, and then comes the fig leaves. The sense of death, when Adam and Eve crossed God, the sense of death and putting feet on death, they wouldn't have known what death was up to that point. No, God could say, you will surely die, but the word wouldn't have meant anything to them because there wasn't death.
Mm-hmm.
But when they sinned, they immediately must have sensed fear and shame. They must have an internalized message of lack of worth and fear of loss of value, loss of control. And their response to that immediate sense of death was to go and put on fig leaves to cover themselves. They hid from one another before, and then God came and he said, well, you know, we put on the fig leaves because we knew that we were naked. They didn't want to be vulnerable, and we don't want to be vulnerable now, but in God's foresight, that's what marriage does. You can have a lot of relationships, but marriage is a relationship, a difficult relationship that you're commanded not to get out of. Well, why wouldn't we get out of it? Well, because it's a place for where a work is done, and that's the dying to myself. And so he set this up. You know, Paul says, husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church, gave up his life. So that means, well, if I give up my life, I don't have any rights. Okay, that's that part of it. The husband doesn't have any rights. And then wives, submit yourself to the Lord, or to your husband as the Lord. Well, what does that mean? Well, you don't have any rights. So it's kind of an equal thing.
Mm-hmm.
The sentence of death, which is our mortality, is the reality that we exist in. And so we set up defense mechanisms to deal with our fear and shame. And a fear and shame are attached with that sense of our mortality. The fear has to do with, as we've talked about before in a lot of shows, the need to be valued or have value, the need to have control, the need to have power or resources. So these are absolutely fundamental, this idea of building defenses to deal with fear and shame, internalized message of lack of worth. They're absolutely fundamental. They're quintessential to the human experience of being, and there's not one exception. So we develop a framework of relational distances because we want protection, security, want a buffer zone from other people, experiences that they bring. And this this framework of relational distance is what we call personality. Relationships are distances. Distance between a person is what personality is about. The distance between myself and other persons is what I mean when I say my personality. Getting back to this question that kind of came up earlier, it's a divine institution arranged to close that distance, to break down the defenses and bring about this vulnerability again. It's a process that's never ending. Why is it never ending? Well, first out of the bat, God created Adam and Eve very differently. And in marriage, you should never expect that you and your spouse will ever really be on the same page.
Well, that's a pretty profound statement.
I mean, we agree a lot, but every day, even in the best marriage, there's a conflict comes up. Maybe not a serious conflict.
Is that mainly because of gender?
Well, a lot of it's because of gender.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not so, and even if, so you could say a lot of it's because of gender, male versus female, masculine versus, and you can see, so you see a one marriage where you've got, you know, a lumberjack and a homemaker. But then you can see another marriage where the man is a florist and the gal is breaking horses or something, you know, breaking Broncos. Okay. And you say, well, is that a flip of the masculine and feminine? Yes, it is a flip of the masculine and feminine, but it doesn't change the fact that that between the masculine and feminine, there's a certain dynamic that will never be at rest. So the guy who's the florist and the gal who is breaking Broncos, they're going to have the same process as the guy who's a lumberjack and the gal who's a homemaker.
Okay.
They're still so there's this kind of, I don't want to, yeah, there's sort of like the heads and tails of the coin always, you know, and so that doesn't change. And that's just I call it the divine genius of gender, because there's a process, a dynamic that never will rest, and it's always requiring, demanding, surrender, sacrifice, vulnerability, lots of ways to be vulnerable. Even when you sit down and share an opinion, in some way you're being vulnerable. When you listen to somebody's opinion and take it to heart, you're being vulnerable. And so that's a lot, I was going to say, of what goes on when I'm doing marriage counseling.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's important about that. Helping people to get on track and have the right frame of mind and begin to embrace vulnerability and change and not so that there's going to be a perfect marriage and they're never going to have a disagreement or anything like that, but so that they understand the purposes of those and they flow with the purposes of those disagreements and they really begin to grow. And the whole purpose in that then is to put us in position to really hear from God and really respond mm-hmm. with the right heart.
Yeah, a beautiful Christian marriage, that three-chord strand, you mm-hmm. know, that can,
oh, exactly.
really unbreakable mm-hmm. When it's working correctly. If you need some help with your marriage, maybe you know somebody who is struggling in their marriage and they could benefit from Daniel Pryor's expertise. How do people get in touch with you, Mr. Pryor?
Yes, you can call me at 425-778-6169. That's 425-778-6169. People also email me through the website at BibleBasedCounselor.com. You'll find these podcasts there. Offices, of course, Edmonds and Kirkland.
Mm-hmm.
425-778-6169.
And you've got a lot of your previous shows on the Bible-Based Counselor website.
Yeah, exactly, yes. Yeah. Very good.
A lot of them on this subject of marriage. Back with more on the anatomy of marriage in just a moment with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. Sound Mind Broadcast is what you're listening to.
Hi, this is Daniel Pryor, counselor and life coach. Where marriage is concerned, an ounce of prevention is worth a lot more than a pound of cure. Too many couples start off with misconceptions and then wait until the damage is done to seek counsel. As a marriage counselor, I help couples understand both the purpose and process of marriage, and I teach essential tools of communion. If you're married or thinking about marriage and want to get started right, contact me through my website at BibleBasedCounselor.com or call me at 425-778-6169.
Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Mark Holland on the journey once again with Daniel Pryor, and the subject this week is the anatomy of marriage. Daniel, you've discussed this a lot during these programs the last few years. You have a lot of information and podcasts, too.
Yeah.
Your website, again, mm-hmm. is what?
BibleBasedCounselor.com.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And lots of shows on this subject, lots of articles, too, on your other website. What's that one again?
That's ChristianCounselorsForum.com.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
So definitely an area of expertise, an area that you've thought a lot about, how to help people get along in marriage, build a strong marriage. Just before the break, we were kind of talking about the importance of gender and acknowledging the differences of the sexes. But so many modern marriages, at least, or people getting ready to get married, they don't want to acknowledge those mm-hmm. things. You know, mm-hmm. like a wife, she says, I'm not going to submit. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm taking that out of the wedding vows, or vice versa, the husband, you know, to have and to hold.
Yeah.
And,
or to lay down your life.
What? Yeah. No way.
Yeah.
This is an equal opportunity marriage. But
There's
some problems with mm-hmm. Some of this modern approach to that.
Yeah, and quite a lot of that is cultural. It's gone on for years and years, and it's sort of built. It's based on a lot of different things. You know, our whole culture going in the direction of civil rights, those kinds of things, and just the emphasis on the individual individualism versus community. And of course, in a community, you have different people playing different roles. But in individualism, you know, we sort of like want to, you know, each individual call the own shot, the shots for his or her own life. You know, Hollywood builds this persona of, you know, the, you know, the self-sufficient individual. And it, you know, and it goes hand in hand with kind of the breakdown of community, the breakdown of the family. Another factor is just kind of the desire of wealth. And, you know, the kind of, you know, he travels faster who travels alone. The idea of, you know, the family comes secondary, but financial power and resources come first. You have people out there so far in debt, buying things that they can't afford and really don't need because they're looking for satisfaction in those things. And so this self-fulfillment, self-empowerment is a large part of the misunderstanding that people have when they come to marriage. When you come to marriage, if you're a young person anticipating marriage, or maybe you're a person who's been married before and for one reason or another, it's your second marriage, maybe your third marriage. You need to be committed. You need to be ready for change. If the marriage is going to work, you've got to change. And I'm not talking about, don't say, yeah, she's got to change. I listen to this guy and he says, you've got to change. No, you've got to change. The person, the individual, right. You yourself have to say, marriage is to change me. You know, I've heard people in marriage say, you know I can't change him, or I know I can't change her. And I say, well, phooey. I mean, that's the purpose of marriage is for both people to change. You are a factor in his or her change, and she's a factor in yours, and don't forget that. But yeah, a lot of those, the positioning we have when we go into marriage, oh, I'm not going to submit, or I'm not going to lay down my life, is it's a cultural thing. And we have to recognize that marriage wants to do this. It wants to position, it wants to make us vulnerable and position us to receive Christ, you know, in a fuller way, and to comprehend that in a fuller way, to really understand our salvation in a fuller way. If we're not in for that, don't expect to have a marriage where Christ is the center. It can't happen. You know, what's wrong can't be right at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Well, getting back to some of your ideas about relational distances. And yeah. Interesting, you got to say, relational distances are fig leaves.
Now, those are the fig leaves. Okay. Keeping people somewhat away. Now, there are different distances. People say, wait, our marriage isn't distant. No, relationships aren't distant. They're distances. So an inch is as much a distance as, you know, a light year. So we keep people that we feel safe with, we keep them closer. Other people we keep further away. But it takes an odd twist. The distancing includes a lot of different things. And sometimes you find people who can be close in or appear to be close in a situation where they're not required to be particularly intimate. And yet when they're in settings where they're required to be intimate, they find ways to push people away. Mm. You know, kind of a classical case would be the pastor of a large church who everybody thinks is such a wonderful, fuzzy, feely, huggy person. But at home, he's quite distant from his family, or she's quite distant from the family, because now these are relationships where vulnerability is required, whereas from the pulpit, I don't have to be vulnerable. What does distancing look like? So, well, distancing personality types are ways of distancing. Personalities are structures. So as I said, you know, my personality is a system of rules or structures or ideas or boundaries that keep me a safe distance from other people. That's what my personality is. The core of my personality is a defense mechanism. So personality types can be ways of distancing from people. In fact, they are. Demeanors. That person's always a bit moody, or that person's joyful. You know, you're a joyful
person. Kind of a porcupine.
Yeah, a joyful person attracts certain kinds of people. And why would I be joyful? Because I've learned by being joyful that I seem to attract the kind of people that make me feel secure and safe. Other people say, oh, not me. When I'm moody, that's when I attract the people that make me feel safe, which is nobody. So that can be an extrovert, introvert, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Those are all, can all be ways of distancing. Social habits, You know, the way I cross my legs, or the way I, you know, clean my ear while I'm talking to people, or something like that. Social habits can be distancing. Social status can be a distancing. Communication styles are distancing mechanisms. Love languages can even be distancing mechanisms. Vocational choices are distancing mechanisms. Addictions are distancing mechanisms, and on and on and on. Just about everything we do, all of our choices, our ways, we sort of are drawn to choices that ensure us our best shot at feeling value, control, and power. That is, our best shot at feeling safe and secure. Why? Because mortality is our ever-present reality, and we don't want to think about that, but we don't really. And when I say mortality, I don't think we don't want to think about the day that we're going to die. But more to the point, when mortality to me is not like it was to Adam and Eve, is not so much about the imminent of going being buried in a hole. Mortality is the feeling of not having value, not having control, not having power, resources. It's an internalized message of lack of worth. That's what mortality is. That's what I fear. You know, of course I'm going to die, but I don't know enough about that to really be afraid of it. The thing that I'm really afraid of is just kind of being shut out, no
being
value,
out of control.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some of the ways that distancing looks. And I use a tool, Genogram. We've talked about a little bit. A lot of counselors use this. And the way that I use the Genogram is I use a tool to help to see how that earlier generations distanced. What were their distancing mechanisms? What techniques did they use? And how are those being passed on generation to generation? Because those tend to be invisible. People don't realize when they're distancing people. They don't most people don't realize that personality is a defense mechanism. Most people don't realize that I intuitively choose out relationships that are at a particular distance, and I keep some relationships more distance and some less. People tend not to think, they're not, you know, think naturally about it that way. And so because they're sort of invisible, they tend to get passed on from generation to generation. So my parents passed on some distancing behaviors to me. And so when I do the Genogram, I go back and I kind of get a look at those, and I point out in Genograms, I point out to people, you see that, you know, happy Uncle Harry that was always joking, that humor was a distancing behavior. Mm-hmm. It kept people
sarcasm,
at a distance.
Maybe.
Yeah.
In our family, yeah. It was sarcasm.
Yeah. Sometimes it's arguing. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's being busy, different things like that. So they begin to recognize that, oh, that wasn't intentional, but it was a way of keeping people at a certain distance to maintain a sense of value, control, and power. So I use the Genogram in that personality. Then is the individual's developed defense mechanisms. We have these defense mechanisms, these distancing mechanisms, and call those personality. It refers to how I react with other persons. When I speak about a person's personality, I'm inferring how they relate to other persons. That's really what that means. Conflict in marriage, then, is always a personality conflict. And people think about personality conflicts. Oh, got to quit the job. Got a personality conflict here.
We have irreconcilable differences.
Yeah. But personality conflict is the only kind of conflict that persons have. And we can change our personality. Think about personality conflict. That seems like, that's kind of the final straw, isn't it? Because you can't change personality. We've talked on this show before. You can change personality. Boy, it's not easy. And that's a lot of what marriage is about. When we talk about change in marriage, we're really talking about that person got put in my life to change my personality. Now, how do we change personality? Basically, three ways. We work at empathizing. We work at sharing boundaries. We work at sharing realities. We simply need to stop beating around the bush, and we need to get down to the business of dying to ourselves. This is women. This is where women get to hold the door, because it's men first. When we talk about when you talk about dying to yourselves, it's it's men first. And then wives, when you see your husband beginning to change, you need to take off your fig leaves too. Don't stay in the past. got to allow the distance to close. And I see a lot of that where, you know, one of these starts to change and then the other one sets back and crosses their arms as if to say, okay, see, I told you so. Now it's your turn. Instead of humbly joining in and saying, yeah, and myself as well. And so I see a lot of that. It's we need to cooperate in that. And again, this is what I help people to do. We talk a lot in marriage counseling about just this process of closing the distance, changing the personality. And boy, it's not easy. Mm. We go over things and over things and over things. And if that's something you need and are interested in.
Well, some of the anatomy of marriage this week, and has a real interesting approach to marital counseling. If you know that you need some help, maybe you know a couple who's struggling. They've gone to several different counselors. Nothing seems to have helped. Let Daniel Pryor have a try. I think he would really love the opportunity. And if people would like to have some help, how do they get in touch with you, Daniel?
Well, call me at 425-778-6169, 425-778-6169. People also email me through the website, BibleBasedCounselor.com. Lots of articles at ChristianCounselorsForum.com. Podcast back at, we're playing tennis here, podcast back at Bible Counselors. BibleBasedCounselor.com, offices Kirkland and Edmonds.
Okay, always great information. The Sound Mind broadcast with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor here on KCIS.
You've been listening to Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. To make an appointment, call 425-778-6169. Be sure to tune in each Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. for Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor.